It's time for Cofield and Company. Live at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar, inside Treasure Island, it's Cofield and Company.
Yeah! All right, here we go. Friday. Fun? Yeah, it's been pretty good so far. Pretty good. Griffin's back in the Finley Toyota Studios. He's having a lot of fun. He's in a good mood. James is with us. We are here at Treasure Island, Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar. We'll get you some baseball score updates. The Mets are down early. We were just talking about the Mets and what they could do in the second half. We'll hit on a little more baseball here in a couple of seconds as we were looking at teams to bet that are kind of middling but might be aggressive at the trade deadline and could go on a run in the second half and then surprise some people with a big payoff. Dodgers, Yankees are obvious choices, but they both have flaws and they're very beat up. So I think they're susceptible to being upset in the playoffs. And we've seen teams from the wild card position, teams that were very ordinary in the middle of the season, have a big second half. So we'll get to that. We're going to get to the latest on Davante Adams as Davante continues to talk about other quarterbacks outside the organization, but he doesn't want to get traded. That's what we're being told. I don't know. It's the vibes are weird around Raiders wide receiver Davante Adams. So, Danny, you had another question you were saying during the break about someone getting aggressive or waiting. Were you talking about your Nats or the Mets?
I mean, that could go for both, but I was more referring to the Mets since that's who we were talking about because the Nationals don't spend money. So,
which is absurd.
Absolutely.
Don't get it. They have it.
It's so frustrating.
It's embarrassing.
But like we also mentioned, they do have some really good prospects. A couple of them have been called up, and a couple of them will probably be called up by the end of the year.
Yep, the name we were blanking on last name, Dylan Cruz, the kid out of LSU. Very bright prospect, and he's doing okay in AAA, but they're probably going to get him some time. And who knows, maybe he could be one of those guys that comes up in mid-August, and then that, you know, he explodes. Now, they're not in a position right now to make that run. The Mets are, you know, right around 500. I think today they were coming in at 49 and 46. You know, I'll give you another team that I think would make some moves, and they've recently developed, and they in the past they certainly had a good culture, but they've recently gotten back to pretty good organization and good culture. The Diamondbacks won today. They very much, well, I don't know if the team's underachieved. There's individuals on that team that have underachieved. So they've got some pitchers who have been less than overwhelming, have been less than what you expected. Corbin Carroll was a great rookie a year ago. What if he has a big second half? What if Eugenio Suarez actually, you know, can hit 250 with some power? Right now he's around 200. So they've on the roster, they've got upside.
Yeah, Corbin Carroll needs to turn things around. After what we saw last year, like, he was all the hype, and then this year it is, I don't want to say a disappointment, but it's pretty close.
I agree. So a lot of possibilities on the board. The odds we were throwing out there from one book included the Mets at 55-1, the Diamondbacks at 50, Red Sox I actually like because I think they could be aggressive, 35. I don't like the Royals because I don't think they'll augment much. Add anyone. I don't like the Padres. I don't like the mix on that team.
Speaking of that, do you think the Padres are ever going to be able to put it together?
Yes. They've missed consistently. But the Soto trade they made was actually pretty good. They got a, you know, building block pitcher in King. They'll get it right. You know, the Dodgers and Yankees are a different level. Red Sox should be at a different level. Those teams need to compete every year. And they need to be aggressive. I appreciate the fact that the Padres try. And when you try, you're generally going to be in the mix.
It just hasn't worked out
for them. It hasn't all clicked in a given year. They've had injuries. You know, they tried with Soto on the squad. They move him, and he wasn't going to stay around, and they probably weren't going to pay $600 million. So that was a good move to get out from under him and get a little bit of value back. But, yeah, no, I think the pod squad is kind of interesting. All right, this weekend, Two things I am interested in tomorrow. They go off at about the same time. WNBA All-Star Game. Side and total is out. Team USA going against the WNBA All-Stars. Team USA minus 5.5. The total's 193.5, which sounds really low, but we had Kenny White on yesterday who said last time they did this sort of exhibition before the Olympics, it was a bit of a bloodbath because absolutely Team USA has got to play real basketball. This is probably their, this, it's probably the most valuable exhibition type game they're going to be playing in.
Absolutely.
So this can't be like, you know, a 195, 178, no defense, Olay time. It's got to be real basketball.
Yeah, I think they're probably going to play pretty close to it because, I mean, their Olympic run starts in a week. So you guys got to mesh. You got to get to know each other very quickly if you plan on getting a gold.
And there should be some extra motivation, really, on both sides.
Yes.
Now, my question all week has been, will the WNBA All-Stars play as hard as they can? You don't want to injure anyone on Team USA, but you want to walk that line. I would like to see them play that way. Listen, I still believe that there were powers that be that really can't speak up and won't speak up, or maybe they will if they're pressed on it, that kept Caitlin Clark and even an Angel Reese off the Team USA. And the excuse the rep made was, hey, we're trying to put together the best basketball team, the best 12 players, so that we can win. Well, you didn't do that because Diana Taurasi's on the team, so that's an honorary position. And she'll play, but she's not one of the 12 best WNBA players. And then they also said, well, we didn't want, you know, Caitlin Clark on the team because, that could be a distraction. She doesn't play. All everyone is asking about is why she isn't playing. The way I look at it, Clark on the team, off. You're probably going to win the gold. You could grow the game here in the States by having the most popular player in years, maybe ever, on the team. But, you know, if you want to stick by this, we put the 12 best on the team, you're lying. So that's kind of silly. So my long point is, if I were Team USA and I'm playing defense, I'm destroying Caitlin Clark. Like, I'm sending a message. She ain't scoring.
Yeah, and as Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese and the rest of the All-Stars, you need to show Team USA what's up. You need to show them, hey, I deserve to be playing with you guys, not just in the league, but also on the All-Star or the Olympic team.
Both sides should be motivated.
Yeah, but Team USA is coming out a winner. Double digits.
Really? You're going to lay the 5.5? You think it's easy?
Yeah. I don't know if it'll come easy, but I do think it'll be double digits. It might be like within, you know, 6 points or so, and then it comes down to, would they do fouling at the end? Try and get that win?
Why not? Still game situation, right?
Yeah.
You might be in a close game or two in the Olympics, and there could be a gap. You know, you could be down, you could be up. So you might have to, it's a good practice situation.
Work on those free throws, ladies.
Other side of this. And I'm going to get back to this because there's one more layer to this we'll get to in about 12 minutes. Also this weekend was scheduled to be a massive fight weekend. This was Tyson and Jake Paul.
Oh, that's right, and it got delayed. What was it, ulcers?
Yeah.
Okay.
On the Tyson side.
Yep.
Jake Paul is now fighting a MMA dude. He's fought in the UFC, is doing bare-knuckle boxing. Mike Perry. Mike Perry's crazy. But is crazy a good thing in this situation? I'll explain in a second. Let me just set up the fight first. So those guys are going at it. Tyson, Jake Paul, was on Netflix, which means essentially free if you have Netflix. It's not a pay-per-view. I was mistaken. I thought this one might just be on Netflix anyway. It's not. It's on DAZN. It's $65. The WNBA game is 5:30. The fight is 6. I thought I'd have a decision to make head-to-head. I don't think I have that anymore. I'm not. While I want to see the fight because it could be a freak show and actually could be competitive, I don't think I want to fork over 65.
No, that's pretty steep for a replacement fight. But this is the example of why you got to get that multi-TV set up. Do you have that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've got it. I'm always working on it.
Yeah, me too.
I had someone bury the wires And they didn't do the greatest job, so I've had some issues lately. But no, I have the I got a three TV set up, nice. A wall. So you're right. When I say it, like, hey, what are you going to watch? But someone will get the main TV. It's a bigger TV and then two smaller ones. Someone will get the main TV. If you're willing to fork over the dollars, what gets the main TV? A Jake Paul fight or the WNBA All-Star game?
I think if I'm paying the money, that's got to be the main TV because clearly I'm into it enough that I'm willing to pay $65 over a game that is on a whatever cable channel I'm already paying.
All right.
But I'm forking over money specifically for an event.
So Jake Paul against Mike Perry. So the main TV for me will go to the fight, but here's the caveat. This is kind of a false setup. This Jake Paul card will take 10 hours. Like it's you when you watch high-level boxing cards put on, but even more so UFC cards put on, UFC cards bang, 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 yeah. bang, bang. There's not much of a delay. These other MMA kind of sideshow type cards, they go on forever. So what I set up falsely is you probably can switch back and forth, and in between the fights, the fight goes on the smaller TV, mm-hmm. and WNBA, in my case, gets pushed down to the big TV.
Is there a lot of – because so I haven't sat down and watched a boxing event in close to 10 years.
Right.
Is there, like, with something like this, is there going to be, like, a lot of musical acts in between? Or, like, why such a huge delay?
They do a lot of interviews. There are musical acts. And I don't know. They just can't hustle it along. It takes forever. So maybe they've perfected it. Maybe they're getting better at it. Jake Paul goes into this fight against Mike Perry, minus 425. There's other boxing matches with the real female boxers who have experience. That card will start at 6. Mike Perry, who really is a wackadoo, and there's good and bad things with wackadoos. Bad is I think he would be very susceptible to cutting a deal with Camp Paul and go, you know what, bro, kind of fight hard, but don't go all the way, okay? Here's a little that's my noise for a bonus, a little backhand with the money.
A little kick.
Now, crazy could also mean he could accept the, oh, yeah, you know what, I'll take it easy on him. And then in the ring, he's like, nope.
All it takes is for him to get hit hard once, harder than he thinks he should, and then it's on.
He was quoted the other day. Oh, because he saw Jake Paul. It's been pubbed that Jake Paul was drinking during training camp, and Mike Perry's like, who cares? He goes, I've drank before a fight. I've smoked before a fight. I guess he's saying he, I don't know, relieves himself in a sexual way right before walking out. I don't believe that one.
Probably not.
I mean, not to get too personal, but you know, I'm out. I'm dead asleep. I'm boxing right after that. He goes, I still get the dub. I'm a crazy mofo. Are you getting in? You getting in with the hype? You getting in?
Maybe.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's that big of a deal that he's drinking during camp, but to what extent?
I don't think it's great.
To what
extent? You're right. A night of partying is not bad.
Yeah, and
but like if he's getting sauced every night, and like, not working on his conditioning, that ain't good.
Exactly. If he's going out and drinking heavily every night, terrible. He's probably going to lose. If he went out a couple weeks ago and had one night and then has been strict since, fine, let it go.
I used the wrong word, sauced, because that has a lot of connotations. I meant drinking, not being on the sauce.
Yes.
Because he has put on a massive amount of weight because he was anticipating Tyson, and for some reason he thought he needed to be like 225, which I think is dumb. Be young and smaller and fast. You're not going to freaking power through Mike Tyson. So
what weight class is this at?
We'll say there isn't a weight class.
Okay.
I don't know if that's official, but Perry gives up weight, and it's certainly, I don't think it's been booked as an official heavyweight fight because Mike Perry probably walks around at 200.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not as big as Jake Paul, and that may serve him well. Conor McGregor chimed in on this. Conor's been out for the longest time. He was going to fight here at UFC 303, but then he broke a toe. He's expected to come back sometime before the end of the year, maybe against Michael Chandler. It won't be at the Sphere. Conor McGregor called Jake Paul a little dweeb.
What a great word. Haven't heard that since I was in middle school.
It's a good old school word. I don't think he's little or a dweeb.
Well, he's definitely not little. I don't know anything about him to not call him a dweeb.
I think Jake Paul actually has a lot of Conor McGregor in him in terms of promotional stuff. And I know people listening are like, can you stop talking about this guy? Why? He's as big or bigger than, from a promotional standpoint, any boxer in the mainstream. They're good at it. Both of the Paul brothers are good at it.
Might even be better than UFC stars. I mean, Jake Paul, I know that, well, from my position, he seems bigger than his brother.
Yeah, well, he's a better boxer, so he's got more to work with. I mean, I think Logan's more into pro wrestling.
Okay. Is he, like, in WWE, good, or is he in something else?
He's been in WWE. I don't know if he's active every week or what his deal is, but he's an amazing athlete because I've seen him do some, like, you know, flips out of the ring. And so they're both real athletes. I mean, I think when they came out on the scene, we're like, who are these YouTube dorks, the blonde-haired guys, good-looking guys? They can't fight. And they can – now, I don't think – could Jake Paul make a transition to real boxing and be an elite, you know, top five in the division boxer? I don't think that is possible. I don't think that's going to happen. But for him, what does it matter? He picks and chooses different intriguing opponents. If he's making even a few million a fight, I think it's overstated what he's making, but he's making money on the periphery. And there's a lot of boxers who aren't making a whole lot of money because they have bad promoters or they don't know how to promote themselves, or, you know, they get these promoter wars and they fight once a year. So boxing's in a weird position. McGregor made the dweeb comment during a press conference for Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship. There's a belief that his deal with UFC has two fights left, that Conor McGregor after that will go to Bare Knuckle Fighting, which I don't know how he would make the money he's making with UFC or that he made with boxing. So, but I don't – listen, I'm not going to – that's another guy. I'm not going to question his acumen with making money because he made a lot in fighting, and he's making even more now with, like, multi-layered whatever it's called, McGregor Corp, because of the whiskey and offshoots of that. So he's making a lot of money.
I just wonder how much he's actually into it, or if he's doing it to say, oh, I beat them. I did that versus, you know, I'm going to take this serious, no partying, no nothing. I'm really still all about it like I was 8-10 years ago. Or, oh, I made a boatload of money, but I still want to punch people, so I guess I'll fight.
It's the question of all time, right, with fighters? Once they're making tons of money, how easy is it to get up and train and be disciplined? And just like Jake Paul, you know, people see him, you know, drinking or partying during camp. I mean, I think McGregor sent it on himself. Now, it might have been a ruse. It might have been a play to try to trick people, but he doesn't shut it down. I guess the only possibility with bare knuckle boxing for Conor McGregor is if he's the promoter, you know, he can dictate how much he's going to make, but how much would it draw? What would the pay-per-view price be? And I guess one positive would be he snapped his leg, you know, whatever, last fight or two fights back. There's no kicks.
Right.
Bare knuckle boxing. So that would help. But is it worth it if you're only making, you know, now I'm making $3 million a fight when UFC is giving me 25, or, you know, one boxing match I got 100. I don't know what his motivation is. So,
yeah, I don't really see a win for him there.
I don't see him slinking away without taking a couple of bad fights somewhere, because I don't think he wants to be out of the limelight, and a lot of his limelight is built around fighting. So I don't know how easy it's going to be to tell him, Conor, dude, you're rich as hell. You don't need to fight anymore.
I'm sure somebody's already said it to him, and he's like, no, I'm still going to fight.
Coming up, let's get into the latest from Davante Adams, who was talking about TB12. We are live here, about 35 minutes left. Cofield and Company at Treasure Island. We will give you some updates on some more of the baseball games and what's going on with the WNBA All-Star Weekend.
Hanging at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island, it's Cofield and Company.
Danny Smythe is with us, Cofield and Company, Treasure Island, Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar. Checking out all the games, baseball games right now. Philly 7-4, in the fifth over Pittsburgh. Your Nats, 7-1 over Cincinnati. Sixth inning.
They look good. I'm quite surprised.
You're only 900-500.
Yeah, well, they were a game back, and then the Rockies scared them. They hit a rough patch after Colorado.
Your boy Juan Yepez with a home run.
Yep.
Three ribs, so.
As did Kybert Ruiz, two-run shot.
Mets are 4-1, top five. Who got blown up for the Mets? Manaea. That's going to leak oil the rest of the way. Got some young guys. Put Jose Buttow in there. Right now he's a bullpen pitcher. Edwin Cabrera.
That
four innings, decent ball.
The battle for Pennsylvania looks pretty exciting right now. 7-4. Top of the fifth. I'm sorry, bottom fifth. Halfway over, already 11 runs.
Might someone have action on that?
I do not know.
Okay. So we're getting ready for NBA, WNBA All-Star Weekend. And the setup's great because people felt like Caitlin Clark got snubbed. Angel Reese probably got snubbed by Team USA. You got some old heads on the team who might not even play. But the league is very big into, hey, we got to rep. We got to rep the building blocks. I understand that. I don't love it, but I understand it. Rhino, one of our P1s, pretty much listens every day, at least comments every day. Rhino said, has anyone yet used the Jaylen Brown situation to get cover for Caitlin Clark not being on the Olympic team? I don't understand what the get cover part means. But let's talk about Jaylen Brown, and let's see if there are similarities to Caitlin Clark not being on Team USA. Why do you think Jaylen Brown was skipped over in favor of Derek White?
I have no idea. He's coming off of a great run in the playoffs. He was named Finals MVP. I think he should have been on this team, but I guess, yeah, I'm not sure why he got beat out by Derek White.
Well, it was Stephen A. Smith, and I think Stephen A.'s got good sources. Stephen A. kind of picked a fight with Jaylen Brown during the regular season and hinted at the fact that he's got sources who say Jaylen Brown's kind of a weird guy and not well-liked by everyone.
So are you saying that being weird keeps you off a team even though you're talented? I'm sure there's plenty of weird guys.
Not liked will keep you off all-star teams when the players have the power to pick the team.
Is he not well-liked because...
I don't know. I know that's what Stephen A. was suggesting.
Right.
That there's something about him that people don't like. Some people in the NBA don't like. Jaylen Brown then showed up at a press conference during the finals as he was rolling high and mighty at that point. And something to the effect of he had a T-shirt on, you know, name your sources. Because he said, Stephen A. said, sources say this to me. So then he responded by saying, name your sources. Then Jaylen Brown was left off the Olympic team. Stephen A. responded right after that happened, and he's like, told you. Now, what he's saying by told you, I think, is these teams are put together with, yes, win. They're more a team than they ever have been. Like the original 92 Dream Team, and there were some units in the early 2000s that didn't win, right? They were put together, hey, all-stars. So when Jerry Colangelo took over and you know, kind of a reboot at Team USA, they were like, all right, we're not going to have 12 All-Stars. There's not going to be the 12 leading scorers in the NBA. It's going to be a team. All the parts have to fit. So that's kind of the first argument on Derek White versus Jaylen Brown. Derek White is a better – well, he's a good defender, and he may not be the type of guy who's like, hey, I need 17 shots a game. Jaylen Brown could be that guy. But I really think it's a likability thing, and I don't think anyone on the men's side is going to say, hey, we don't like Jaylen Brown, so that's not why he's on the team. But I think there are powers that be were like, eh, it's not really a chemistry mix based on what we hear and what we've seen of Jaylen Brown. I'm really stretching out to play to Stephen A.'s narrative. If that's wrong, it's wrong.
I'm curious to see what Jason Tatum would have to say about that.
He was in an impossible position, wasn't he? Because then Jaylen Brown complained as Derek White is on the team, and you're like, okay, I don't know that you're supposed to be doing that.
Right.
And then, hey, Jason Tatum, what do you think? And you're like,
yeah.
What? Huh? Well, I don't know what to say.
It's like trying to pick between your kids. It's like,
I don't want to alienate one of them, so I'm going to be real careful. So let's just go with the unlikable thing. Listen, Jordan initially got some pushback from veteran players, the freeze out. When payback was available for Jordan, Isaiah Thomas was not on the team. You're not on the team. That was clearly Jordan controls things. He ain't on the team. I've always believed that Team USA women, one, there is a little bit of jealousy about all the attention and the money that Caitlin Clark is getting. I don't know why that's the case. I would keep it under wraps. I think it's a bad look. It's helping all of you. Look at the TV money that's coming in. I think Diana Taurasi is the Jordan on this team, and I think that's part of why Reese and Clark aren't on. I mean, it's not even, hey, are they likable? It's their rookies. You got to bide your time, Rook.
Well, yeah, didn't they say they have to earn their spot or earn their time?
I mean, that's fine in theory. Should USA basketball teams be all about veterans?
No.
Shouldn't it be layered with different levels? One, if they can play, have some more youth. And two, you are not only prepping for this, and they have select teams, but you're not only prepping to win this one, but you're trying to get people some experience. Right. Even if they don't play, they're around the atmosphere. So, but hey, I think Taurasi's Jordan. And in the end, her and some other veterans are like, no. Sorry.
How many gold medals does Taurasi have?
She's got four. I think this will be a record fifth.
Okay, so.
And no one's ever going to break that record. Only Caitlin Clark and Reese could, but now they're not on the team, so they can't.
Exactly. They'd have to play until they're about 42, 43 years old.
But she's playing at 40, Diana Taurasi, so she's just protected her potential record as well.
Yep.
That's funny how that works.
That's what it seems like.
How much this week, and Danny Smite's with us. Danny doing a great job today, serving as a company. He actually did a morning show as well as co-host with Ed Graney. So this is a long day for you, and I appreciate you coming in. You prepped hard. Your freaking energy's really good. So Danny's a star at our place at Lotus Broadcasting. How much this week have you guys gotten into Devontae and receiver and stuff he said on there, and then the buzz in the middle of the week where it was like, no. There's no trade rumors about Devontae and the Raiders. No, he's completely happy now. Stop with that.
It's led off two of our last three shows, so okay. Quite a bit.
So give me your take.
I think that he doesn't want to come out and say it, but if they are not looking like they are going in the right direction within the first month to 6 weeks, he's going to want out.
Why would you say that? That was receiver was last year.
Yeah. You know what else was last year? 63-21. You know what gets brought up all the time? 63-21. I guess some things get left in the past and some don't.
Well, the biggest thing for me is Devontae got really unhappy at poor quarterback play.
Absolutely.
And there is a big potential that what could happen this year.
Exactly.
Poor quarterback play.
So to say that even if they're 3-3, if he's averaging 4 catches and 60 yards a game, is he going to be happy? No.
His agents came out, said trade speculation is baseless and unfounded, but it's not because
– Not at all.
You essentially said that if things didn't change in the middle of last year, you wanted to be traded. The quarterback situation hasn't changed a whole lot. Devontae this year went on with Kay Adams and mentioned, without needing to mention it, Aaron Rodgers is in his ear all the time about coming to play with him. So that makes us feel like, hey, you're longing to get back with your old quarterback. And then here he is on Club Shay Shay, and Shannon Sharp brings up Tom Brady, and before he can even finish his Brady question, Devontae fires in.
When you said Tom Brady, I knew what you were saying. Let me see what he's going to say. And then you got to talk about Odie is, I don't care. I don't care.
You would take Tom at 47, 48?
58 right now. Hey.
You would take him at 47 or 48, 58 right now. Wait, what does that mean?
He's willing.
What's right now?
He's willing. Okay, Tom Brady 10 years in the future over the two quarterbacks he has on his team.
Now, he didn't say that, but he kind of said it.
He's
actually very good at that. He comes just short of absolutely saying it. So maybe this is what he wants. He wants the attention. I think it's going to get annoying for him with the speculation, but he's the one who said it.
Yeah.
That he has no issues with Tom Brady being 1,000 years old because he would like to play with him.
Listen, he can get mad because he's going to get mad. It's going to be brought up first day he's in doing a presser in training camp. He's going to get mad at the questions. But what he needs to realize is he was the one who said it, and he has said it multiple times, so he needs to deal with the questions.
Give me Devontae, Club Shay Shay 2.
Tom know about how I feel about him, man. And the other part is I think I'll be the first person that played with Tom and Aaron. Right. So that'll be pretty cool.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he's getting older, but, I mean, he got to still be able to throw it better than, you know, half these dudes in the league
at
this point.
It.
You know, so.
But you better be able to protect him because he ain't going to be able to take them hits better.
And he ain't going nowhere either. He's going to sit right there in that pocket. So you better have a nice, secure little home for him in there.
Okay, talking protection. Tom Brady. Take two if you want. Tom Brady can throw better than half of these guys in the league. What is going on here?
Well, since neither of his quarterbacks on his team are top 15 quarterbacks in the league.
What are you basing that on?
Just history.
Did the press box go through Matt Sims' top 40 quarterbacks in the NFL?
No, we did not. Where did he place those two? In Minshew and AOC.
Akon was not in the top 40.
Good start.
Minshew was 39.
Great start.
Backups were, there were multiple, there were like seven backups.
Okay, so now they're both before him on the same team. And he said half the league. Right. Tom Brady is better than half the league. So you are sitting here saying, not you, Devontae is sitting there saying, Tom Brady, a year removed from NFL, is still better than the two quarterbacks on his team.
I don't mind Devontae being frustrated. I would be extremely frustrated. I don't think he knew what he was getting himself into with, you know, multiple coaching changes and then Derek Carr. That, by the way, that was his mistake, thinking that Derek Carr was, you know, like a top seven quarterback in the National Football League. So that was his mistake. He made that choice.
Yeah.
But these choices afterwards, the transition to the next guy has not been easy, and they don't have the next guy. And if I'm a receiver, I'm not getting my catches, I'm getting blown up on the field, and I'm not winning, then I don't blame him. But you're right, he's kind of playing the middle road where he's hint, no, that's not what I mean. Like, just say it. I mean, it'll turn into a tire fire, but just say it. He said the same thing last year. He said the same thing last offseason, but he kind of snuck it into some interview that was not recorded, and he said what he said. Like, this Jimmy Garoppolo is not what I signed up for.
No. And when, I'm not going to say if, when Minshew plays a game, that'll already be the sixth quarterback that Devontae Adams has played with since coming to Las Vegas.
Boy, if the Packers would only have paid him, and they were offering him kind of low money for a player of his level, I think it was like $17 million a year when he's worth, and he's paid right now, you know, 30 to 32. So it really wasn't an option. But if he looked back, and he does look back now, because he even said, Jordan, you know,
yeah,
if I knew Jordan Love, he didn't know. But coming to the Raiders, it's a challenge. There's a lot of organizations that, you know, hey, you get paid, but it becomes real challenging. There's a reason, you know, why they are where they are consistently.
Classic example of grass isn't always greener.
And I've said it every day this week. Aaron Rodgers is in New York with the Jets. That may seem like a really, really green grass. Historically, something will happen, and it's a little bit burnt. It's a little bit brown.
Hopefully not to Aaron Rodgers. He had that happen to him last year. I hope for a fully healthy season this year.
Treasure Island on a Friday. We're here every Friday. We'll be here on the football Fridays during the football season, which, again, starts up sooner than you think. You got the practice games coming up in just a couple weeks in the NFL, the exhibition games, and then college football starts on August 24th, and a really cool place to hang out, including tonight at Gilly's. Awesome place, really good country bar, and tonight they'll feature rising artist Bailey Callahan. Gilly's right here at Treasure Island.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
I like it. I like it. Plenty of time for the grab bag. We have waited until the very end of the show. We got, like I said, plenty of time to update you on the A's yesterday because I have no patience for this. I'm into it sometimes, and then I realize 3 minutes in, I'm going to start getting all pissed off, and we start talking numbers, and I like numbers, but I don't think we know all the numbers, and I think most people are like, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. So yesterday, the A's, Oakland Brass went in front of the stadium authority. They addressed that, hey, we want to play 10% of our home games outside the market, which I think is really weird, and didn't mesh with the original numbers. It said they had to sell out every game to meet the numbers so they could pay back their $380 million from the county and the state. So they cut that down and said, hey, you know what? We'll do, you know, we'll have a max of four per year. I think it was like six combined over 2 years. We're not going to do eight, nine games out of the market. Okay. So then the money plan to build a stadium that's $1.4, $1.5 billion, Danny Smite's up here. Public money. I don't even know why they would say this. They said they don't need all the full $380 million. They need $350. So I guess that addresses that shortfall, you know, taking away some home games and putting them in neutral sites. Debt financing, that they're going to take care of $300 million. So it's either coming from Fisher and his family, or I guess they'll get a loan. But then the craziest one is equity of $850 million to get them up to $1.5 billion. The equity basically is them selling off pieces of the team. But the problem is the team is probably worth, if it's a straight valuation now, they would be maybe in the middle, you know, worth like $1.5 billion. And if they sold off $850 million in equity financing, like Vivek Ranadive wants to buy part of the team. He's the Kings owner. Maybe they'd get the dude in Utah or other people. Problem is, if they sell off $850 million, that's over half what the team is worth now. John Fisher wouldn't be the controlling partner. What's the point?
No, I'm actually so while you were talking, I Googled how much it's worth. That $800 million would be 66%.
You're right. There was another person who I saw that actually had that at 60-plus percent, 65, maybe up to 71% of the team, depending on the valuation. And that's the confusing thing here is, do you put the value on what they are in the future? Because you really can't, because things could fall through. Like, when they come to Vegas, have a new stadium, they might be worth $3 billion, $3.5 billion. But right now, they're this team that's based in Oakland for a few more months, and then they're a road warrior in Sacramento. Things could fall apart financially. I don't think banks would lend. Well, they have to put the valuation on it. So I don't think valuation would be over $3 billion. So it's a weird deal. And it's another one is you walk away. Another one of those times you walk away and you're like, okay, what are they doing? Do you have the money or not? Can you do this? You can't move the agreement that was made unless there's some, I don't even know if you could do a renegotiation. You can't move from the Trop site. It is what it is. That was what the deal was cut for. So the 380 is for that site.
Yeah, we had Mick Akers on this morning on the morning show. And
great guy.
He broke it down really well. He wrote an article about this for the RJ. And he said the whole time John Fisher was saying, probably not going to use the full 380. So why'd you ask for that much? Like, I know there might be it might at the end cost more than you thought, but anything over the amount you have to pay for anyways.
Yeah, they're responsible for overruns.
But I did like that. I believe it's the A's have to pay the first $100 million, and they're going to hold $50 million of the public funds for the final $50 million of the stadium.
Where are you that this gets done, and they're here in 2028 in their new stadium, percentage-wise?
Probably 60-40 it gets done, because okay. When we had talked about this on the morning show last week, I actually looked into a couple of the recently built stadiums, and they seem to average between 24 and 28, 29 months to build. So that's only about 2 to 2.5 years. So if they plan on playing by 2028, the latest they need to break ground would be end of next year to still be okay. So I think even because there are still a couple more things that need to be agreed upon, and those are coming up in a meeting in August, but they think that it's more likely that's going to be put in the December meeting. So hopefully if it's not in December, they have a very small window at the beginning of next year to get it approved.
Back in the bag.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
Danny had a question. Is Vegas becoming a pizza town? Was it not a pizza town?
I don't know. Is it known for pizza? I mean,
no.
Yeah.
I think we're known for, like, obviously the clear things that have been marketed in the past. But from a food standpoint, I don't know that we're known for anything. High-level chefery, right?
Yeah,
on the strip. A lot of celebrity chefs. The city food of note, maybe the most famous thing would be shrimp cocktail.
Yeah.
I never thought it was a terrible pizza town.
No, there's some good spots around town.
Is it becoming a pizza town? Whatever that means, not so sure. There's a top 50 best pizzerias in America. Pizza Rock made it?
Pizza Rock made it at number 28.
And then one other spot made it that I think is relatively new, which always kind of raises an eyebrow. And maybe I'll now be forced to hit it when I go home.
Yeah, you said it was on your way, so.
Well, could be on my way. It's a place called 00 Pie and Pub was number 45. Well, they got a bar, so I'm in. I made my own top 8, and I probably missed people. I also had about 7 places that were honorable mention. I like Naked City Pizza. I think Metro is always reliable. By the way, there's a Metro inside of Ellis Island, our friends. Grimaldi's is very good. It's a certain style of pizza. Coal-fired pizza. It is a somewhat of a, it's a staple in certain parts of New York. I have Pizza Rock on the list. You know, we did Monday Night Football there for a while. Really good place, 2 locations. I like the downtown location. Dom DeMarco's is excellent. That's a DeFara's offshoot, again, from Brooklyn. Good spot. I know you mentioned Good Pie.
Yep.
It's good. I will say both Pizza Rock and Good Pie, you're gonna pay a little more.
Yes. My go-to at Pizza Rock, it was Picante. That was a good one.
Oh, wow, that's unusual. Okay. Not unusual. It's just, you know, a little different. Their Detroit style is very good. I like Pop-Up. It's very casual. It's at the Plaza, which, by the way, I think we're doing Bikini Tug of War again, and that might be the spot. Steve Sears, Bikini Tug of War. Other spots? You have other spots you like?
My go-to is Carmine's.
Okay.
They have a really good lunch special, too. It's 2 slices and a drink, I think, for $8.
Nice. I like Napoli's. I like Three Brothers in Henderson. Sneaky pick is Red Dwarf, which is a punk rock bar that makes pizza. For bar pies, I think the tavern's good. I like Setabello. And I know Willie did a video on TikTok. You should watch it. It looks scrumptious. A place called Manita's. I got probably name about 10 more. So you know what? I answered the question, didn't I?
We're Pizza Town.
We are Pizza Town. If I can name pretty much like 17 places.
I love it.
Off the cuff. That's crazy. All right. Good job back in the studio for Griffin. By the way, you know all the audio you see all over Cofield and Company's Twitter handles. Also up on lvsportsnetwork.com. Griffin is doing a good job of popping that stuff out. We've got a Cofield and Company audio page, so go check that out. Again, lvsportsnetwork.com. We'll have more videos out this weekend. Danny, great job. I know you did double duty, and it's hard to do 2 shows in a day. For James, for Griffin, it's Cofield. Thanks to our Friday home, Treasure Island. Always gracious here at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar. Have a great weekend. I think I'm either picking up some fried chicken or some pizza on the way home.